Are you an accredited investor looking for a new opportunity to generate passive income and build the retirement of your dreams? Then elevate your investment game with Viking Capital, where wealth meets wisdom. Whether you're a seasoned investor or just starting out, Viking Capital can help guide you towards financial freedom through passive real estate investing. With strong and transparent underwriting, Viking identifies low-risk opportunities with the goal of preserving investor capital and maximizing long-term growth potential. And their accessible and responsive investor relations team will help you understand how each investment will impact your unique financial goals. With $800 million in assets acquired, more than $230 million in equity raised, and more than 5,000 units under management, Viking Capital is your path to early retirement. To learn about Viking Capital's latest investment opportunity, which is available for you right now, visit go.vikingcapllc.com/best. That's go.vikingcapllc.com/best to get started today. Did you know that within a decade, women will hold $30 trillion in investable assets? Yet somehow, only 19% of women reported feeling confident in selecting investments that align with their long-term goals. Our friends at InvestHer are out to change that. InvestHerCon is the number one premier conference for women in real estate, and it's happening June 2nd through the 4th in Austin, Texas. InvestHerCon is not just another real estate conference. It's a transformational experience focused on real estate investing, business strategies, and self-care tactics, all designed to help women take control of their financial futures. Gain the knowledge and skills you need to grow your portfolio and build a sustainable business, all while connecting with over 500 women who are playing at the same level. To learn more and to get your tickets, visit InvestHerCon.com today and use the code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. That's InvestHer, HERCon.com, promo code 100BESTEVER to get $100 off your ticket. Quick disclaimer, the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities or to make or consider any investment or course of action. For more information, go to bestevershow.com.
You got to rezone it. Obviously, you got to go through the zoning. But before you even go through the zoning, you want to go through the city officials, get their approval, then the zoning, get their approval, and then get the final approval. Usually it's about three different departments you got to go through.
Welcome to the Best Ever Show, the world's longest running daily commercial real estate podcast. Our hosts interview commercial real estate experts every day to get you the best advice ever with none of the fluffy stuff.
Best Ever listeners, how you doing? Welcome to the Best Real Estate Investing Advice Ever Show. I'm Joe Fairless. This is the world's longest running daily real estate investing podcast where we only talk about the best advice ever. We don't get into the fluffy stuff. With us today, George Abreu with Elevate Commercial Investment Group. You can go check out their website, elevatecig.com. George is a full-time real estate investor. He has a real estate portfolio that is exclusively focused on the acquisition of apartments. And that portfolio is in five states. The states are Texas, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Florida, and you'll never guess the fifth state. It is South Dakota. We're going to hear more about that and what George is up to. So first, George, you want to give the best ever listeners a little bit about your background and your current focus?
Absolutely. Thank you, Joe. Excited to be here with you. So a little bit about myself. I've been investing in real estate for about 17 years now. Started in the single family space. I graduated as an electrical engineer, but knew I didn't want to be an engineer. I knew I wanted to do something else, and that something else ended up being real estate investing. Done everything in the single family space and worked my way up to small multifamilies and then eventually to large family syndications. That was about 7 years ago is when I started getting into that space and turned all my focus and transitioned, you know, everything I was doing. I also had a construction company at that point. So put all the focus towards large multifamily apartments. And since then, you know, we've been able to acquire a little bit over 8,000 units and exit on 1,600 or so and continuing to build that portfolio.
So let's talk about your background a little bit. So you've been in real estate for 17 years, you mentioned, and the last seven was in multifamily syndication. So the first 10 was not. You majored in, did I hear you correctly, electrical engineering?
Correct.
So why did you pivot from single family to apartment syndication?
So the whole time I was doing single family, my goal was to scale. Every year I was trying to do more and more deals. And at some point I kind of hit a brick wall and I felt like it was impossible to continue to scale on the single family side. At the same time, I was also starting to get a little burnt out. We were doing maybe at max 50 or so fix and flips, and then maybe another 100 plus sales. And then
A year.
Wow. I had a team, right? It wasn't just me at that point, but it was a lot. It was a lot going on. And then at the same time, I had the construction company growing. I had branched that off into a roofing sales division as well, where I had 20 plus sales guys selling roofing. And then obviously all the renovations, and I had the bright idea of starting to do custom homes for homeowners, which was probably the worst idea ever. Why? Because it's just expectations on homeowners is different than investors, and just takes a lot to manage and supervise that.
Margins aren't there to justify the additional attention.
No. You could build it in, but even then it's once again hard to scale to. So it was right around that time.
On the custom home front, what's the most expensive home you built?
Right around 1.5.
And what do you make on that generally?
Generally, if everything goes right, maybe 20%.
Okay. But?
But everything doesn't always go right, right? I know there was a few that we held on to a little longer than we wanted to. And that 20% quickly became 10%.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Were you doing spec builds then?
Both. We were doing some custom where we already had the buyer built in, and then some that were just spec.
So you had the system rocking and rolling. What team members did you have in the system? And then what did they do whenever you transitioned to syndication?
On the construction end, I had a fairly large team with project managers, site supervisors, construction manager. And a lot of that was easy to transition over to commercial and multifamily. For the most part, the team stayed intact. Trimmed it out a bit. I got rid of the whole roofing sales and that part of it. Just got really focused on multifamily renovations and ground up. And then on the real estate side of things, maybe about 7 to 8 acquisition agents, if you want to call them that. That completely changed. Had to get new personnel when we made the transition over to multifamily. So nobody really stuck around there.
So you went from having a very active fix and flip, wholesale, construction, custom home business, then transitioning to syndication. What was a lesson that you learned throughout that segue from those industries into syndication that you were surprised by?
I was surprised by it. I think one thing was the teamwork that comes with buying these apartments and how other investors are willing to help and partner with you. Coming from the single family space, that wasn't very common. So I think that surprised me. I wasn't expecting that. Wasn't expecting how it's a relationship type business. You really got to be able to network and meet others on so many ends, whether it's finding new deals, partners, equity. I would say those were probably the two things that surprised me the most.
So now that you have the syndication business, I heard you say multifamily renovations and ground up. So have you done ground up development in the multifamily space?
Yeah, we started doing the custom homes. We first did a 4-plex from the ground up, then did an 8-plex, and then we did a 16-unit. And then the largest we've done was a 206-unit here in DFW.
Wow.
Yeah, and now we've got a couple projects in the pipeline that are around the same number.
Projects that are around 200 units that you're going to be developing ground up? Wow.
Correct.
What stage are those projects in?
One in Northwest Arkansas is fully entitled, and we expect to break ground hopefully by the end of this year, if not early next year. And then we've got one that we just got it rezoned. So we're going to begin finalizing the plans and getting the permits and all that pulled.
Where's that one?
That one's here in Dallas. Okay. DFW.
Cool. Let's pretend we're an LP for a moment and we're presented the Northwest Arkansas deal that's fully entitled and breaking ground this year, early next. My first question is, have you already brought on LPs for that deal?
We're just starting to.
So what is the answer to the question that I'm sure you get a lot, which is, why would I invest now when you haven't started construction yet versus just, why don't you bring in investors later when you've taken a lot of risk off the table?
So I think at this point, we funded everything that was needed to get it to this point. The land is purchased, so it's not under contract, right? We own the land. We've done all the plans. We've paid for all the plans, the engineering, the third party. So we have de-risked it, right? You know, once it's fully entitled and ready to break ground, you know, all that other risk of entitling it is gone. So we feel this is the right time to do it.
I can tell you from my personal investments as an LP, I made the mistake of investing with someone prior to them purchasing the land. And there
wasn't entitled either. Wasn't fully entitled.
I didn't do my due diligence, so I can't answer those questions. I went off of my relationship with the individual and the individual's professional track record. The person is a good person and they're accomplished, but I should have looked at, is the land purchased? Because at least there's some tangible asset that can be sold in a doomsday scenario. And it was really close to losing all of my money that I invested as an LP into that deal. And it's still very much at risk, but they were able to get additional money to purchase the land. And now we think we got it at a favorable price, so we could sell it for perhaps a break even and I'll get 100% of my money back, perhaps. But that's a big lesson that I learned as an LP when I'm assessing deals, and specifically development deals, that there's a tangible asset that can be sold later. So I'm glad we talked about that.
I think a lot of people don't know when it comes to development, developers lose money. Not every project works out. Obviously, when a project does work out, they make money, but some of the due diligence you have to do on these parcels of land, sometimes it comes back that it doesn't make sense. It no longer pencils. Hey, for us to bring water here is going to cost us this much money. This really doesn't make sense anymore. And there could be that due diligence funds that are lost.
And how much is that? So now let's talk from the GP perspective. Let's talk specifics. This Northwest Arkansas deal, how much due diligence money is at risk should the project never come to fruition?
Right now, in total, I believe we have about $800,000 into the deal.
And that includes the purchase of the land?
No, that's just a portion. The landowner was a partner in the deal too.
Ah, okay.
Which is always a great thing to do if you can negotiate that. Well, you don't have the cost of the land. If you have them roll the cost of the land into the deal.
In this case, what's the land worth approximately?
This one is right around $20,000 per unit, and it's a 278 unit.
278, so that's $5.56 million. I use a calculator. I'm not a whiz. That's 5.56. Okay, so call it $5.6 million is what the land is worth. So I heard what you just said, but is the land valued more once all the engineering and third party and entitlements are done?
So, absolutely. Every step of the way.
So when you agreed with this owner on, hey, yeah, you should be a partner with us, do you value it at 5.6 because that's what it's going to be worth once everything's done? Or do you value it at what it is today? And then you go do the entitlements and then you're basically increasing value from what you locked in the land price at.
It's a negotiation like everything else, right? Obviously, we'll try to value it before the entitlements.
Right.
but if they're smart, we're not having to pay that right away. So if I was the landowner, I would be arguing, hey, it should be worth more since we're not actually paying him for the land and it's being put into the deal, it should be valued as the fully entitled.
We'll get back to the show with the first some sponsors I'm confident you'll find value in learning more about. Deciding how to invest your capital is more challenging than ever. That's why it's never been more important to partner with a company with a solid track record and that has thrived through various economic cycles. Companies like BAM Capital. BAM Capital is a trusted multifamily syndicator that has delivered a historical average of over 35% IRR with an average hold period of 3.5 years. BAM Capital has never missed a preferred payment, never lost an LP's investment, and never called capital past the subscription amount. BAM Capital is currently raising capital for a fund designed for accredited investors, targeting a 15 to 20% IRR and a 2 to 2.5x equity multiple to its investors over a 3 to 5 year hold period. If you're an accredited investor and you want to learn more about multifamily investment opportunities with BAM Capital, visit capital.thebamcompanies.com. Again, that's capital.thebamcompanies.com.
In that $800,000 in costs, what makes up a couple big chunks of that $800,000, if anything, like, is larger than the others?
The plans is a big chunk of it. The engineering, just a full set of plans, is a large chunk of it. Your third parties, not so much. The plans are definitely the largest.
I know if someone were to do a custom home, their set of plans depends on the home, but call it $25,000. This is not a smaller custom home. This is a 200 and something unit apartment community. So is it like $300,000, $400,000 for a set of plans?
Right around there. Yeah. The full set.
And how long ago did you start having the conversation? The very first conversation with either the broker or the landowner about doing this project?
This one's interesting because we're actually partnering with them. So that negotiation had already begun before we got into the picture. The partner that we're partnering with had already struck this partnership with the landowner.
Okay.
I can't remember exactly when they began. If I remember correctly, they've been at it for about a year and a half or so.
Okay. So they've been at it about a year and a half. What do they need you for?
A couple different things. Equity one. The way banks are leveraging now, they got to bring more equity to the deal, especially with construction deals. So that's one. And then two, we have in-house management. So we plan on managing the property once it's built and bringing some value there as well. And then also on the construction piece.
Is your team overseeing the construction?
We're overseeing, yes. Okay. We're not the GC on it, but we are overseeing.
Okay. I ask about the time frame because I heard what you said earlier, this year or early next year, which actually isn't that long. You expect to break ground. So in total, about 2, maybe 2.5 years, most likely from initial conversation to breaking ground. Does that sound about right?
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of that is getting the entitlements, you know, getting it through the city.
What's that process like?
Horrible. No,
just a lot of concerned citizens.
Yeah. So one, you've got to get it through so many different departments and councils, and you got to rezone it. Obviously, you got to go through the zoning. But before you even go through the zoning, you want to go through the city officials, get their approval, then the zoning, get their approval, and then get the final approval. Usually, it's about 3 different departments you got to go through.
Who gives that final approval? You said city officials first, then zoning second, then you said final approval.
City council. City council is the final. And then at every stage, you've got different personalities. A lot of times they seem so disconnected from construction and what their community really needs or what's feasible. So it's a process. I mentioned that one in DFW. We've been working on that one for about 2 years, and we finally got the approval. So one thing, if we are putting land under contract, nowadays we're making a contingent on getting that zoning, even on some redevelopment. So we've got some redevelopment hotel to multifamilies in Jacksonville, Florida. That one we put under contract and contingent on us getting the zoning first. So we're able to go through that process. It took us about 6 to 8 months, and then we closed on it once we had it.
And I'm sure during the meetings with city council, zoning officials, and city officials, no one has a personal agenda that they want to throw upon you to help them get reelected. I'm sure that's absolutely not the case.
Yeah.
I'd like to just take a step back as it relates to development. And before I ask the question, I want to say how much I respect developers, and I'm so grateful that there are developers for obvious reasons. Now, I'll ask the question. Let's talk specifics. Northwest Arkansas deal, it's 278 units. There's been a work in progress. It'll be about two and a half years, $800,000 in costs that have been put into the deal. You haven't broke ground yet. There's been a lot of conversations with city officials, zoning, and city council, and you said it was a character building process to go through that. Are the numbers, as a return standpoint, that much better that it justifies going through all this for multiple years just to get it to the finish line?
If you're buying right and you're building right, yes. I do see some syndicators that I think bought their land for too much, and I think they're so disconnected from the actual construction piece that they're going to end up paying top dollar for these things. And the whole point is to be in at a low basis, mm-hmm. right? And have a nice exit at the end. But I think their basis is going to be too high on some of these deals. And that's why you don't see that many going up right now.
So how do you think about, I want to make X on this project in order for it to pencil as a general partner? Tell us what your filter is, will you?
As a general partner, usually we're looking at it more honestly on the investor side. You know, if we can bring our investors a certain return, then we know the returns we're getting, we're happy with. And on that end, we're usually trying to get our projected returns to a 2X within 5 years for our investors. IRR somewhere in the 15 to 16 range, depending on the deal. And this depends. On a ground up deal, we want to try to get that maybe a little bit higher versus an existing multi.
So looking at it from a basis standpoint, how do you think about it?
Like percentage-wise or just
I don't know. However you think about it. If it's a percentage-wise or if it's, hey, I want to be in generally, for example, I want to be in for X, and however you think about it. Because you said the whole thing is about getting in on a low basis. So we just elaborate on that and give an example maybe?
A-class deals are selling for, let's say, $250 a door. And I know my all-in cost can be around $200 a door. That is a pretty good spread. That's on a basis-wise, but some of the stuff I was talking about. Obviously, if your all-in cost is right around what an A-class is selling for now, that doesn't make sense, right? But I mean, a lot of the stuff I see now, that's kind of happening. So they're going to have to hold it long-term to really build that spread there, that margin.
Thanks for walking us through that. Anything else as it relates to construction? Because clearly that's what this conversation evolved into, because I'm just personally interested, and I think it's interesting for best ever listeners as well. So anything else as it relates to development specifically that we haven't talked about that you think we should?
Look, there's more risk, right? I think we've kind of mentioned that or alluded to that. There's more risk on a lot of the stages, whether it's the entitlement stage. There's no guarantee that you're going to get through all these departments, right? And actually get your project fully entitled. So that's a risk. And then once you do, then you've got to actually build it. And there's a lot of risk when it comes to that, and making sure you hire the right GC and that got somebody overseeing them and making sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and a lot of room for error. So the returns should be higher, right? You know, higher risk, higher return. And then you definitely want to make sure whoever's leading deal sponsor has that experience, because if they don't, there's things that pop up left and right, and you got to be able to expect that.
Generally, have you seen that your exits on the development are higher than what's generally out there for, say, value add deals?
The projects we've done, yes, absolutely.
And on the projection standpoint, it sounds similar to what a value add multifamily projection would be. Would you agree with that?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I was spitting out those numbers, I was more focused on existing multi with a ground up, maybe closer to a 16 to 18% IRR and higher than a 2X equity multiple.
Okay, cool. Well, yeah. Thank you for sharing your expertise with us. I know you've been on the show before. We already asked you your best ever advice on previous episodes, so we won't get into that. How can the best ever listeners learn more about what you're doing?
We've got a ton of information on our website. They go to elevatecig.com. We've got free content on there. We got all kinds of stuff.
I forgot to ask the one question I prompted at the beginning. South Dakota, how'd you end up there real quick?
We try to look for markets that, you know, same thing with Northwest Arkansas, which I think more people know about that one now. But we look for markets that have got strong population growth and job growth. So we two other deals in South Dakota right now, and then we'll be closing on another one in 2 weeks. And our first one was bought in 2020, so during COVID. We're trying to stay active towards the end of 2020, and we stumbled across the South Dakota market and the fact that they were still strong even during the height of COVID because didn't shut things down. And then we started learning how business friendly they are, and it's just been a great market. You know, we got into those two deals, and then we've been looking for another since, and we were lucky. It was actually one of the sellers that sold us one of those deals back in 2020, decided to sell this property that we're closing on now.
And what city is it in?
Nice. Rapid City.
Well, thanks a lot for sharing your expertise and your stories as it relates to ground-up development and talking to us about how to address questions that LPs might think whenever they're looking at a ground-up development deal and how to think about it from a general partner standpoint also. So thanks for being on the show. Hope you have a best ever day and talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Joe.
Hi, best ever listeners. Joe Fairless here again. And one last thing before you go, would you like to receive a short weekly email with proven tips from experienced investors, free tools and resources, and a roundup of the week's most relevant news and best ever content? Well, if so, join the community of nearly 15,000 commercial real estate passive and active investors who receive the best ever newsletter. Just go to bestevercre.com/access and you'll get the very next one. I hope you enjoyed this episode. And as always, thank you for listening and have a best ever day.